Good evening, it's 5 p.m. and this is Today in YGK on CFRC 101.9 FM, broadcasting from Lower Carruthers Hall on Queen's Campus in Kingston, Ontario. Today in YGK is brought to you by CFRC's News Collective, Christina Laurie, Jesse Bell, Henry Walker, and Juliana Gonsalves. CFRC's news programming is made possible by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, and the Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. I'm CFRC's broadcast journalist, Christina Laurie. Let's start off with your local news headlines. A group of medical students at Queen's University are organizing action aimed at addressing housing and homelessness in Kingston. While it's called the Queen's Medicine Municipal Day of Action, the work has been underway for weeks. Students have been meeting with local service providers, community organizations, and experts, and are now bringing their findings directly to city councilors. The last time the event was held was in 2021, also focusing on housing and homelessness. This year marks a five-year follow-up, as homelessness in Kingston has risen by 133% over that period. First-year medical student Zara Rahman and second-year student Tim Song spoke with CFRC about how the initiative came together.
So this initiative is called the Medical Day of Action, or the Municipal Medical Day of Action, and it is run by a team of medical students right here at Queen's. There are a lot of similar initiatives that happen all across Canada, whether it's through province, whether it's through the entire nation, where we meet up in Ottawa. And we wanted to do something more local here in Kingston as a group of medical students. So the Medical Students Society, also called the Aesculapian Society, has a group of medical students who are specifically working towards equity and advocacy as a committee. And these medical students work independently to do different things around Kingston and around Queens to try to make a difference. For example, we host fundraisers. For example, we host different awareness events. And this year, we wanted to bring back an event that's happened previously at Queens, the School of Medicine, called the Day of Action. So that's kind of how it came to be.
Mm-hmm. And again, this is the first time this has come back since 2021. I was wondering if you could speak to why you decided to bring it back now and why revisit this topic.
Yes, for sure. So this initiative used to be a lot bigger pre-COVID, where people were able to meet in person. Basically, as a quick overview of what a day of action is it basically is a bunch of medical students or health professionals looking through the community, whether it's municipal, provincial, or national, like I stated before, to see if there's any issues that as medical students or health professionals, we could address. So this was a lot easier to do, as you can imagine, to try to talk to city councilors or talk to municipal government in person. So over COVID, it kind of died down. But just as an example of a few different things that the Kingston team used to work on includes water fluoridation, very important. We don't have that here in Kingston, as well as homelessness relief or housing for the precariously housed, which is, again, a very pertinent issue here in the Kingston community. So as things got back to coming in person and we started having more lively discussions about how we can make a change here at Queen's, the first thing we kind of stumbled upon was this program called Municipal Day of Action. And as we were looking back at past references, talking to past organizers to see what would be a good fit for us moving forward, we found that the topic that they addressed in 2021, housing and homelessness, would be a perfect fit based on all of the pertinent issues that are happening here in Kingston today.
And to add on, we felt like it was very important in the times that we're in right now. So since 2021, homelessness in Kingston has risen. And we've also seen that there are a lot of different barriers. And I think even looking at this politically on how much of this becomes a pertinent topic, this is something that is continuously discussed. And we felt that it may be best for us as medical students to advocate for our future patients, especially considering all the different barriers and how health, there's so much more research coming out now, especially since COVID, on how the social determinants of health. So for those who don't know, those are kind of just factors in your life, like income or housing, and how much that can actually impact your health. It's not usually just, you know, exercise or diet. It can also be where you live, how much money you have, what access to resources you have. And we found, at least through our research, that with homelessness rising in Kingston, there's also a reduction in those health outcomes as well. And then that could also tie into other issues like wait times in hospitals, for example, in emergency wait times, for example. So we kind of looked at this more holistically as we went throughout our research.
From their consultations, the group developed two key asks for council, focused on improving housing services and health outcomes for unhoused residents. The first calls for better data collection and coordination across services.
When you approach a topic like homelessness, you can consider there's so many different layers. There was a point where we considered addictions. There was a point where we considered home standards, for example. And there's just so many layers. But we kind of did a more of a deep dive into the research. We looked into health outcomes. We looked into how different municipalities approach this. And one thing we found, as Tim mentioned, was data and the importance of it. So when we did the deep dive, we looked into, so United Way, for example, in Kingston does a lot of data checks. So there's something called the by name list. So not going into the specifics because it is quite complex, but basically the by name list identifies individuals who are unhoused in Kingston. And these are individuals that are comfortable being recognized and has all of their data, and it allows us to keep track on them and make sure that they're okay. And the way that the city of Kingston does it right now is that they just list how many people are unhoused. So for example, I believe currently it's over 500 in 2025. But as we've mentioned before, there are a lot of barriers to that data, and it may not give the full holistic idea of what's going on, and that can impact what policies we're able to provide in Kingston. So the ask that we have right now is to make sure that that data, so the by name list, or there's something called the Homeless Individuals and Families Information System, has a good idea of who is being unhoused and then who is being housed. So inflow and outflow. And this is important to have, you know, for example, either on housing for homelessness, like as an annual report, just to make sure we have an idea as the city to know where people are at, where folks are at, and to see what different barriers they're experiencing, and then also having a good monthly report card. So I believe it was either United Way or one of the community organizations that did an evaluation on the data and the situation of homelessness in Kingston, and they found that unfortunately the data is just not as well upkept in Kingston. So there is that gap. They reported this as being a huge barrier. I believe it's only updated monthly. And sometimes there can be difficulties in recognizing who's being housed and who's not being unhoused. Because when you're living, for example, on the street, and then you were housed and then now you're not housed, that's a day by day. You're surviving day by day, not month by month. So we also looked into other jurisdictions. One, for example, is in Hamilton and the Durham District as well. So in Hamilton, what they do is that they have a lot of comprehensive data. So they not only provide like how many people are unhoused in Kingston, but how many people were housed, how many people are, for example, of different marginalized communities, how many of them are women, how many of them are Indigenous, and then how many of those have been approached, for example, by someone to get housed. So I think that provides more of a realistic idea of what's going on the ground versus just these are how many people are unhoused. And I think that can really benefit, one, the government, the municipal government, especially just to figure out when you are coming up with policies, what support you can give. But also, I think for the people of Kingston, I think that this would allow for a lot more grace and I think a lot more empathy if you just have an idea of what someone is experiencing and the different layers of it versus just seeing a number. Because we as individuals are not just numbers. We all have different stories. And I think having that data would be able to have that better picture of what's going on.
Yeah, for sure. I think keeping in mind that the residents of Kingston really value safety and really value community, we want to also emphasize that. And it can also often feel for different community members if they don't have access to this data or don't know what's happening. All they see is that numbers are increasing. Yeah. They're going to feel disheartened. They're going to feel like the city's not doing enough, or they're going to feel like the city's efforts are futile. By having these metrics like the inflow and outflow data more specifically outlined, then the people of Kingston can understand, oh, looks like the different things that are being put into place are actually meaningful. They're helping people get back on their feet and back to transitioning into community living. And this will hopefully provide more of a stable relationship between the city building committees as well as the communities as well. So that's kind of what we're aiming for with this ask.
Yeah. And then also we mentioned before, but we had so many discussions about what are the different factors to homelessness. Like I've mentioned before, there was like a huge gripe with us for like at least a few weeks of figuring out what direction to take. And I think that kind of explains of how we're approaching homelessness in Kingston. We don't truly know what are the different factors right now. Like we can definitely estimate it based on like what research says, but having that publicly available dashboard or that public data allows us to just kind of understand what are the different factors. And for the folks at home that might be wondering, okay, but like, how does this matter? Well, for example, the by name list. So those are the guides, and they can, one, develop those policies, but two, in places like Hamilton, for example, they have the by name list, and then they have a little subset group of people who are at most or at risk, and then they are able to provide those individuals from that subset to specific housing resources. And I think that is an idea of where we would love to go, where we could look at this, and again, looking beyond just the numbers, but seeing how we can better support people with what resources we have.
Their second ask emphasizes incorporating Indigenous housing models into local approaches.
So as medical students, we often see, or we often try to look at which populations are more vulnerable or more susceptible to different health issues. It's the social determinants of health that Zara talked about earlier. And the thing that we, I guess, focused on this year was the sheer number or a sheer disproportionate number of Indigenous individuals who are experiencing homelessness, not just in Kingston, but globally. And we thought that this disproportionate effect was something that maybe we could look into Kingston more specifically in to see if there's a way to help provide support for this more vulnerable population. So in order to do this, we talked to a lot of different community groups here in Kingston itself. We had a conversation with the Language Nest. We talked to 4D. We talked to the Ikanu Patient Services, which is a group that works up with the James Bay Indigenous folk and bringing them back and forth with KGH. And basically, we've decided that we want to ask for more Indigenous-led housing, culturally grounded prevention services, wraparound supports, and basically just strengthening the city of Kingston's truth and reconciliation commitments. So all this to say, for both ask and ask two, for ask one and ask two, the city has been doing amazing work. Mm-hmm. When we talk to some of the different organizations like the Canadian Association for Ending Homelessness, they listed that Kingston is doing a great job in addressing homelessness. So again, for the second ask, it's kind of more of a push towards you're doing a great job towards supporting Indigenous initiatives. We want to see more. We want you to keep doing what you're doing and kind of push that forward. So a few different ways that, again, it's a very broad ask. Support, strengthen truth and reconciliation commitments. Very broad, very abstract, if that makes sense. So a few different ways that we're kind of hoping that could go about its way could potentially be continuing to invest in more Indigenous-led supportive transitional housing initiatives. So we had a conversation with Tipi Moza, mm-hmm. which is the supportive housing, one of the main supportive housing organizations here in Kingston. And they suggested that one aspect of supportive housing that could be important was maybe having more Indigenous-specific housing centers or complexes. Right now, the Language Nest is working on helping individuals who identify as Indigenous to find housing or put in applications. And by having a center that's specifically investing in more Indigenous-led supportive housing would be really beneficial to the community at large. Another way could do this would be to increase municipal funding. Mm-hmm. Another way could do this could be to look at how the Indigenous Community Land Trust I guess fits into the implementation of different strategies for building housing in the future, and potentially looking into an Indigenous care center, which basically means working with the local Indigenous partners like the Language Nest to identify a site, maybe funding pathways and implementation timelines to move basically a comprehensive care center forward.
Yeah. And to add on, we felt that, like, for example, from our conversations with Tipi Moza, that the city is doing amazing stuff. And Tipi Moza has been, you know, doing a lot of groundbreaking work. A lot of communities outside of Kingston sometimes want to come to Kingston because of the access to services due to Tipi Moza's amazing work. And we want to frame this in encouraging this amazing work, just because, especially in a time of budget cuts. So we found, for example, recently with the federal government's budget cuts, there has been a huge reduction in services that will be negatively impacting a lot of these community organizations. I believe it was the Nest specifically, that the Language Nest specifically, where there might be a lot of reduction in what supportive services they are able to provide. And I think that in these times where a lot of folks are probably deciding, what can we support? What can we not support? What is in our budget? I think that's where we are at politically. And I think it is so important for us to encourage the amazing services, because we are able to see the benefits that they're having on, especially in Indigenous peoples and especially those experiencing homelessness and that intersectionality between those two marginalized communities. And I think that is something that we really wanted to emphasize. So if there ever comes a time in the future where there has to be a decision made, or if there is budget cuts in the future, we want to be there saying that, hey, just remember all these different individuals who you are supporting, who may be impacted by any other future decisions that you do make. Please keep this in mind.
Students are now meeting with city councilors throughout the month of April and hope to bring the conversation to the provincial level as well. Ramon and Song say they've already been getting a response from the Kingston community.
From those initial conversations, I think a lot of folks were really happy that we were talking about. They were really, the reactions that I received was a lot of hope and a lot of just hoping that things can get better, and a lot of gratefulness as well that people were looking into this, especially as medical professionals. And from the physicians that we've spoken with in our class. So for example, I did an announcement and one of our professors was talking to our class about how important it is to discuss the social determinants of health, to look at medicine outside of just what we learn in a lecture hall, but rather, and just slides, but rather the lived experiences of individuals. And then we've heard that echoed from our peers as well. So a lot of our peers have been approaching us, like a lot of folks, for example, in the first year class have approached me about how excited they are for this initiative to be able to make a difference and to also want to join this initiative if they haven't, like, you know, gotten the chance to. And I think that this shows a lot of optimism and hope that is kind of missing from the public discourse recently. I think things have been really down and sucky for the past few years, just with how, I don't know, like how life has been. And I think that this offers a lot of hope and glimmer of optimism that a lot of medical students are approaching with and a lot of faculty members and community members are approaching with.
I would also say that humility has been a big aspect of our community consultation, especially as it's been a lot of learning as we talk to all these amazing organizations and speaking about all the very important and invaluable work that they've done.
Looking ahead as the group dives into conversations with counselors, the group hopes this work will have a positive impact in the Kingston community and continue to grow as an ongoing initiative within Queen's Medicine.
Yeah, I'm really excited to see where this will go. I think that one of the things that really excited me when I first wanted to bring back this event as one of the co-chairs of the Equity and Access Committee was the fact that medical students could have so much fun learning and being so involved in the community as Queen's medical students with Kingston. I feel a lot of the times that Queen's itself feels like a big bubble where we're just nestled into downtown, not really focusing on anything else that happens in Kingston. And the School of Medicine is a smaller bubble embedded within the bigger bubble where we don't even talk to oftentimes the rest of Queens. So I think that this way, having an outlet for people to be able to contribute to the community or learn about the community through advocacy and equity, which are big foundational, I guess, skill sets that medicine or doctors needs, I think is such a great way to, I guess, be connected and understand what's going on, not only with Kingston, but also with our own beliefs and values. I think that this will hopefully be an initiative that continues to grow, not only for medical students, but also for Kingston itself.
I believe, for example, if we are able to make a difference in the community that we're in, that is already one stroke forward to making a difference elsewhere. And I think that is my hope, that we continue this effort and continuing to build that advocacy, the passion in a lot of students, because our team has been really, really passionate about this and the community has been really passionate about this. So I think that is my one hope for this. And I'm thinking on a more long-term perspective, one, that we're able to help the community that we are part of to hopefully make a difference and be able to address some of those, for example, those DIAs, those numbers that we addressed at the beginning of this talk, and see how we can support in that front. But also, I think like developing a culture within Queen's Medicine, but even other medical schools, for example, or even within Queen's, on how important it is for us to support our own community and be responsible for our own community. It goes down to that very basic idea of humanity that I think is always echoed in, you know, the humanities, medicine, but any field where you help someone that is in need because you are a human being and that person matters. And it the benefit of another person is a benefit for myself as well. So I think that is one thing that we hope to see in medicine, especially as we progress in our careers, as we progress to become, you know, residents or attendings, that we carry this with us, this idea of community consultation, learning from others, humility, and just the humanity aspect, the compassionate care aspect.
For CFRC News, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative, this has been Christina Laurie.
This is your Environment Canada weather report for the Kingston region. We begin with Wednesday, April 8th. We are going to have a beautiful sunny day here in the city of Kingston. It's going to be cold, but that sunshine will make what normally is a 3-degree day feel closer to 6 degrees. Thursday, April 9th, we're back to that lovely spring weather. Daytime high of 13 degrees in the forecast with just a 25% chance of precipitation. We're going to see mostly cloudy conditions, and there will be a decent amount of wind blowing, but still much preferable to what we had. Friday, April 10th, daytime high of 10 degrees with a 65% chance of precipitation, feeling closer to 6 degrees because of the rain. Saturday, April 11th, this is more like it. 14 degrees, mix of sun and cloud. It's going to be a gorgeous spring day. And that's going to follow up into Sunday, March 12th, another double-digit day, 13 with a mostly sunny condition. And starting off next week, Monday, April 13th, we've got a 13-degree day with lots of sun in the forecast. This is your City of Kingston traffic report for the week, and just bear in mind, winter overnight street parking restrictions have been lifted as of April 1st. We begin with two long-term road closures. Berry Street to Queen is closed for construction-related activity at 283 Queen Street, and Aberdeen Street from Johnson to William is closed indefinitely to accommodate construction activity and staging in the area. We have some short-term road closures as well, including Wright Crescent at Palace Road, which is closed for a contractor to complete roadway repairs, pedestrian safety and access improvements, and traffic calming features on Wright Crescent. There is a minimal traffic disruption on Bath Road to Sir John A. Macdonald Boulevard. Expect delays for the installation of intersection pedestrian signals. The city is installing intersection pedestrian signals at several locations to make it easier and safer for pedestrians to cross busy roads. They are installing these signals at the following intersections: Bath Road at Lafleur Park, Concession Street at Kings Court Avenue, and Stephen Street at Patrick Street. And that's a wrap for your City of Kingston traffic report for the week. Safe driving, everybody.
Looking for something to do this week? This is Christina Laurie coming back with K-Town's hottest events and concerts coming up this week, starting with events. On Wednesday, April 8th, weekly board games night takes place at the Royal Canadian Legion at 6, along with karaoke at Timeout Bar, also at 6. Trivia at Daft Brewing starts at 7, and karaoke continues at the Grad Club at 8. On Thursday, April 9th, the Kingston Public Market returns from 8:30 to 5. In the evening, check out Drag Bingo at Daft Brewing, kicking off at 7. There is no shortage of trivia on Thursday, with trivia at Riverhead at 7, the Grad Club at 8, Something in the Water at 8, and Queen's Pub at 9. Karaoke runs at Jersey's at 8:30 and The Buckle at 9. Plus, the Urban Music Social takes place at La Vida Bistro Bar at 9:30. On Friday, April 10th, a quick and cute scrapbook and card class happens at the Tet Center at 6. Trivia takes place at Wild Wings Kingston at 7. And Spring Awakening hits the Thousand Islands Playhouse in Gananoque at 7:30. Getting into the weekend, on Saturday, April 11th, the Kingston Public Market comes back from 8:30 to 5. And if you want to add another shopping stop to your day, the Kingston Botanical Market takes place at the Tet Center from 10 to 3. In the evening, there's a roller skating night at Golden Links Hall in Harrowsmith at 6:30. On Sunday, April 12th, to wrap up the week, the Memorial Center Farmers Market runs from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. A needle-felted landscape workshop takes place at the Tet Center from 10 to 4:30. For those who don't want the weekend to end too soon, karaoke wraps up the night at the Merchant at 8 and keeps going at the Toucan at 10:30. Now getting into your concerts coming up this week. Wednesday, April 8th, DJ Great White spins at Hotel Wolf Island at 4, followed by Sean McCullough at The Cove Inn at 5. The Deep Dark Woods with O Green will also be playing The Broom Factory at 7:30. On Thursday, April 9th, a midday performance takes place at St. George's Cathedral at 12:15 with Mellow's Choir and Period Instruments, Serene Sounds of the Renaissance. Lauren Carson plays The Cove Inn at 5, Cancer Bats and Guests hit The Broom Factory at 6:30, and Jeff Dunn performs at the RCHJ at 7. Friday, April 10th is a packed night for music. Here's just a few. Not Guilty, Ali Pester, and Ken Jameson perform at the RCHJ at 4. Micah Garvin plays the Toucan at 5. The Red Handed at Timeout at 6. Lucas Oak at the Loaf and Ale at 7. And Heatwave returns to the RCHJ at 8. Then the Oreos close out the night at the Merchant at 10:30. On Saturday, April 11th, Dead Root Revival and the Millwrights play at the Broom Factory starting at 7. The Kingston Symphony presents Under Paris Skies with Jill Barber at the Grand Theater at 7:30, alongside the SOS ABBA Experience at the Spire. Tiny Horse performs at Signal Brewery at 8, and Guilty Pleasures take the stage at Tiernanog at 9. On Sunday, April 12th, closing out the week, a youth open mic happens at the Broom Factory at 1, followed by Dawson Gray and Connor Wicklum at 7:30. Castle, Sweetleaf, and Sweet Machete perform at Daft Brewing at 7:30. An Elton John tribute show takes place at the Spire at 7:30, and James Gordon performs at Hotel Wolf Island starting at 8:15. That's just a look at what's happening around Kingston this week. Have an event you'd like to add to our online and on-air calendar? Reach out today via cfrc.ca or at CFRC Music on Instagram using the link tree in our bio. For more details on these events, check out the full calendars on cfrc.ca. Thank you for tuning in to CFRC's local news programming. To revisit episodes of Today in YGK and listen on the go, be sure to head to our podcast network at podcast.cfrc.ca. Today in YGK is brought to you by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada, the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, and the Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. Be sure to stay tuned for more CFRC programming coming up next.
Thank you for listening to this podcast produced at CFRC 101.9 FM at Queen's University, situated on the traditional territory of the Anishinaabe and Haudenosaunee peoples, and brought to you by the generous support of the Faculty of Engineering and Applied Science.